following is a presentation from your friends at Forcecast.net.
It's the Forcecast.
Home to the official podcast of TheForce.net.
I feel the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Read a Star Wars novel today, and the Force will be with you.
The Forcecast presents Jedi Journals.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Jedi Journals on Forcecast.net. This is the February 2011 episode, and I am Jovial Jay, and I'm joined here, as always, with Chris.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing? I'm doing good. How you doing?
Real good, real good.
Looking forward to getting into it. We got a lot of good stuff to cover tonight, and we got a couple interviews that we're gonna run for everybody as well here.
We do. Very excited about that. You know, I feel like we have way too much stuff. I was worried when we first started this that we were not going to have enough, but it seems that is completely not the case.
And our hands are tied. We've been asked to keep it at a shorter pace, so we're gonna just.
It's only gonna be 4 hours instead of the 6 that we had planned.
Right.
So
right, it's not that bad. I mean, it's just something for you to listen to over the weekends, right?
Yeah. We do want to make sure we mention our spoiler policy as always. If this is the first time you're listening to the show, we don't ever want to give something away. That's a new spoiler, something that just come out. If it's something that's been out for quite a while, we may get into that as an afterthought, but if we're going to talk about something that's a little on the iffy side, we'll definitely let you know beforehand.
Well, and speaking of new spoilers, we've actually got some breaking news here as we're recording this show. We're going to get right into comics now, if that's okay.
Yep.
So we've got a new title that was just announced today.
Just a couple hours ago.
Yeah, it actually got announced a day earlier than we expected, which is great. So we're able to include it on the show for everybody that hadn't heard yet. But there is a new Star Wars title that we did not know about previously, not told about at Celebration 5 or on any of the forums. And it is called Star Wars Jedi, The Dark Side. And I don't know, Chris, it seems to me now there's been several announcements about Qui-Gon Jinn now.
Yeah.
He's showing up on the Clone Wars, and now he's going to star in this new comic, which is a 5-issue miniseries written by Scott Alley, who fans may know as a writer for Dark Horse Comics. He did the first arc of Empire. He also wrote some stories for Tales, and he's also an editor of a lot of the horror titles, including Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Hellboy.
Mm.
And then, let's see, we've got artists... Mahmoud Asrar, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, who's the artist and the cover artist for the series, I've never heard of him before.
No, I haven't either.
Okay. And in the little teaser announcement that Randy Stradley put out, he said that it's a guy that's never worked in Star Wars, at least before. So I guess that's not a surprise. And then there's also going to be a variant cover by Stefan Rue. We're looking for this on sale May 18th. Now, did you notice something interesting about this? The price point for this, that it's a limited series, or excuse me, it's a mini series, but it's a $2.99 price.
Yeah, it's got the lesser. It's interesting. It kind of blows our theory out of the water.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of surprised by that. And in reading the article, Scott's, this is an article that was posted on splashpage.mtv.com. And probably by the time the show goes live, it'll be all over the internet.
Yeah.
But Scott says he actually has more arcs or more story in mind after these 5 issues. But right now they're just playing it as a 5-issue miniseries, I guess, to see how it's going to go. So maybe this is their idea to do something as another monthly title. I don't know.
Yeah, the short version of what this is about is 21 years before the events of Episode 1. It's Qui-Gon dispatched to prevent the outbreak of a civil war on the homeworld of his Padawan Xanatos, whose father is king. The mission that will lead Qui-Gon into close contact with the dark side and start him on a quest that will have a major impact on the future of the Jedi Order.
On Xanatos, people who have read any of the Jedi Apprentice books will know, as we find out, was his apprentice before Obi-Wan Kenobi, and ends up being a, I guess, the main antagonist of the Young Jedi series, which is follows Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan as Qui-Gon's Padawan, I guess.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so that's exciting. I'm glad. I like Qui-Gon. I like the character a lot, and it's cool to see him kind of coming back into the light. You know, there's other characters that kind of come in and out. We've Aurra Sing, for instance. You know, in the Clone Wars, it's like all of a sudden Aurra Sing has a new face in Jamie King, the voice actor. She's on the cartoon, and then, you know, she's been in comics. She was in the movie for just a second, but the Clone Wars really kind of picked her back up, and I see Qui-Gon getting the same treatment here now, so I like that.
Yeah, and Qui-Gon's definitely a character that's grown on me. You know, I think the problem that I had with the character originally was that I knew Liam Neeson from previous work, and so when I see him in Star Wars, it's like, okay, that's, you know, I know this guy from all these other movies.
Yeah.
But the more, you know, I mean, what, we just celebrated, you know, a couple years now since we've had the 10th anniversary of Phantomus. We're 12 years in.
Well, I think, yeah.
And he just grows on me more. I really wish they would have kept him around because he was a really interesting character. And the more I see him pop up in books and comics and stuff like that, there's a lot of great material and a lot of cool things that can be done with him. So I'm looking forward to see what they're going to do with this miniseries. And hopefully it's just going to, you know, be another great storyline for the 20th anniversary year of Star Wars comics here. And yeah, I know based on what Randy said, I think they've got a bunch more stuff in store for us that, you know, still we don't even know about. Because I think he was talking about, you know, 8 or 9 series being out this year or something like
that.
You probably know about half of those.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that for sure. Tell me, what do we have going on with the Star Wars Zone at Dark Horse?
They've got the Sineo Sanda art from his Christmas card up there, which has been up since right after the holidays.
That's a pretty cool piece.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, click on over and you can find a link. This is via darkhorse.com/zones/Star Wars. And you can click through and see Sineo Sanda's little digital Christmas card that he sends out to all of his fans, which is really neat. Plus, they've also got images of his covers for the first 3 issues of Darth Vader and the Lost Command, which, I mean, if you guys know Sanda's work, I mean, he's just this meticulous, painted, like, airbrushed style, and it's just beautiful. So those are really cool.
Of course, that's the regular version is his, and then the other version with the 25th variant cover, which I haven't found yet.
Yeah, that's not an easy one. Yeah, that's a Doug Wheatley cover, which is really cool. And the fact that it's, I don't know, I think we talked about this before in one of the episodes where it's like a giant 25 that looks like part of a ship, and Vader and a couple clone troopers are walking out from between the two numbers. Yeah, I picked my copy at my store. Only got one copy of that variant cover, and they were nice enough to hold it for me.
Nice.
It's a 1 in 10 variant cover, so I think if you're lucky, you'll only find a couple, you know, at any one store, if your store is able to get it at all. I guess it depends on how many copies of the book they order.
Yeah,
that's
usually
the way they place those orders. Speaking of Darth Vader and the Lost Command, also over at the Star Wars blog, they have an editorial from January 21st that people may want to check out, written by Hayden Blackman from LucasArts. You may recognize his name from the Force Unleashed and Force Unleashed 2. He is also the writer for Darth Vader and the Lost Command, and there's a nice little editorial about the storyline and his experiences on it and everything like that. So that's pretty cool.
Comics for this month. We just had the Long Time Ago.
Well, I guess comics for last
Omnibus.
Month.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
I
these
guess.
Are the ones that came out in January.
Yeah, that's true. Long Time Ago number 2, and I believe number 3 is actually out, isn't it?
You know what? Actually, I think that's probably a typo. I think we meant to say number 3 because I think 2's been out for a while. Yeah, 3 was the last one that came out, I believe.
Okay, so Omnibus Long Time Ago number 3. Did you pick that up?
I have not gotten my copy of that yet, no.
Okay. Legacy War number 2. Yep. Let's see, we just talked about Darth Vader and Lost Command. Knight Errant number 4. The 4th of 5 comics to come out in the Aflame series.
Yep.
Did you pick that one up and read it?
I did. I've gone through that one a couple times now. Just trying to catch up with the story on that. So, you know, like most penultimate chapters, you know, there's all sorts of stuff left cliffhangery in it.
Yeah.
And, it's a shame that we've got to wait so long. I mean, it seems like it's longer than a month here that I'm going to have to wait for the next issue, but, it's what, second week of February, I think it's due out. So to finish off the storyline. So I'm really interested to, see how that's going to wrap up. That actually segues nicely for us. We've got an interview that we did with John Jackson Miller about Knight Errant, because not only did issue number 4 of Knight Errant come out, but just at the very end here of January, the Knight Errant paperback novel came out, which is John Jackson Miller's first foray into a book in the Star Wars universe. He's done several ebooks and some short stories that people may be familiar with. And we were actually able to sit down and talk to him for just a few minutes about his time on the book and his comics. And we touch a little bit on Knights of the Old Republic. So I think we'll go ahead and run that for everybody right now. And we'll be back as soon as that's over. Well, we're joined here tonight with John Jackson Miller, author of Knight Errant, the comic series, and also Knight Errant, the mass market paperback on Jedi Journals at forcecast.net. John, welcome.
Glad to be here.
So now that you've you've actually written your first mass market paperback now with Knight Errant. So I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about how you feel about that now that you've completed another story in the Star Wars universe, but this time in an entirely different medium.
Well, it's a big thrill. You know, I think I go all the way back to Splinter of the Mind's Eye with Alan Dean Foster. That was the first real expanded universe novel. And I guess I must have been 9 years old, 10 years old when I read that. And it's one of those things where I always had the, you know, sort of the parallel ambitions. I was into the comics. I wanted to write Star Wars comics. I was into the novels. I wanted to write Star Wars novels. Seeing the finished product now, it's a real thrill, especially because by the nature of the project, you know, Knight Errant being something which is both a comic series and an original novel, it allows me to kind of bring together both of these media, and not just the ideas here, because this particular book, for no extra cost, has a 16-page comics section in it, mm-hmm. A color section. And that's really cool because, you know, not only is that an introduction for the people who, you know, don't know what these characters look like or anything like that, but, you know, to my recollection, it is the first time we've ever had a comic section in one of these paperbacks. And also, if my memory serves, this is probably the first color section to be in one of the mass market paperbacks, going all the way back to, I think, the Return of the Jedi novelization, which had a photo section in it.
Right.
Either way, I think it's really cool. And
very cool feature.
And the reproduction is actually pretty good for the comics at that size. I think this is a big difference between the comics of the old days when they would try to print them at that size. They were right. Shooting them down on a photocopier. Now with PDFs, they can actually make them look pretty good.
Right. Well, so as you mentioned, there's this comic series, which actually came first chronologically for the readers. It's a 5-issue mini. Well, it's the first 5 issues of the series Knight Errant, and it's
right.
Entitled Aflame. You've got the book that we were talking about. You've also got this short story that's on StarWars.com called Influx. So, but these don't all tell the same story, so it's different things that people can pick up and enter in different ways, correct?
That's right. Influx is a free story that's on StarWars.com. It's an introduction of how Kara Holt gets to Sith space. The comic series is the, you know, sort of the origin story of the character, and then the novel follows it several weeks afterward. The way that we've crafted it, you do not have to have read the novel to enjoy the comics. You do not have to have read the comics to enjoy the novel. We really give you enough information to hit the ground running, although we also have some other supplemental stuff out there. We have Also on StarWars.com, we have an Essential Atlas update that I did with Jason Fry and Daniel Wallace.
Oh, that's right.
Which you know, shows sort of the lay of the land out here in Sith space. And yeah, I can get into that in a minute. You know, what the scheme of things is out here. But you know, that's just one of the things where, since I was involved with this on both sides, the comics and the novel, simultaneously. You know, I kept looking at interesting little things we could also do to put out there. And in fact, there's one that I'll talk about in a few minutes here that is going up very shortly, or should be up by the time this podcast airs.
John, how long did it take to complete Knight Errant, the novel?
It took about 3 months of actual, you know, writing every single day. And then, of course, there was the time for rewrites, proofreading, that sort of thing.
That's quick.
Yeah, it was a little faster than I think it normally is or should be. The reason here was I was given a couple of options of windows to put the book into, and I picked this one because it was the earlier one. It was closer to when a flame was going. It allowed us to, you know, sort of get more bang for the promotional buck by you know, doing things like you know, we were able to promote them both together at Celebration. We were able to do things like, you know, we had at Celebration, we had a zero issue that had, you know, half of it was comics preview, half of it was novel preview. And then we had a novel excerpt in the issue of Knights of the Old Republic. Old habits. Knight Errant, the issue of Knight Errant that came out in January has one of the chapters of the novel in it. And, of course, the novel itself has a portion of the comic story in it. So I think we really looked for ways to, you know, make this all one big event.
I believe that's number 4 that you're talking about. I just picked that up last night, and I noticed it in the back of it here.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, John, as you were mentioning all the different things you were writing, I kind of started to make a list. So you were probably writing A Flame. At the same time you're writing the novel, you also had that short story that I mentioned that you were writing. You've probably were also writing one of your Lost Tribe of the Sith ebooks. I know you also have got a Mass Effect story. I mean, are you the hardest working man in comics right now?
I don't know that that's. Yeah, if you go back to the early days, I mean, there were people. You know, Stan Lee was writing all the Marvel books at once.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, I don't think that this is anything close to what they were doing.
Well, what I was wondering, I mean. For at least all the Knight Errant stuff, I mean, you're dealing with sort of the same timeline and characters and stuff like this, but even if you're not and there's all this other stuff you're writing, I mean, how do you just schedule your time to be able to do a novel in 3 months and keep a monthly comic, at least one, or if not two, monthly comic series coming out, as well as all your other side projects?
Well, I think for the novel, I did sort of set up an island in my calendar where that was all I was going to be working on.
Okay.
Yeah, I can say honestly that the order of release of the Knight Errant projects, the individual comic book issues and the novel, they're in the order that I wrote them. I wrote the first 4 scripts and I decided, well, I'm going to do the novel in the following window. And I was so far ahead. Yeah, I would do issue 5 at the end. And that's kind of cool because there are elements in issue 5 that are hooked up a lot more to the novel than probably would have been the case if I had, you know, written that issue beforehand.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the issue still comes chronologically in the storyline before the novel does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people may get a look at a couple of the novel characters that don't, you know, that haven't appeared in Knight Errant, the comics to this point, in that 5th issue. That's going to be kind of fun.
Oh, cool.
And that 5th issue, I believe, comes out with 16th of February?
That's right, 16th of February. And, yeah, I've also got a Mass Effect issue coming out that day, too. So it's a nice. Pretty busy time for me.
I actually just finished the novel yesterday. I took my time with it. I didn't want to rush through it. But it was fun. It was really a pleasant surprise. I found myself wanting to know more about the main character, Carol Holt, right off the bat. So often when I read these books that are set so far away from the prequels and the original trilogy, time period that we're also familiar with, you know, you get lost in all the newness. And I think it's difficult to follow some characters and really get involved. But I didn't experience that at all with this book. So you did a great job capturing the classic feel of Star Wars while building the foundation for a hope. Definitely something we'll be seeing for some time to come, I hope.
Well, thanks. It's good to hear that. This was a lot of fun on my side as well, because I had the space to really get in there and get into these characters' heads.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I have basically three point of view characters that we follow throughout, and it's, you know, it was fun to you know, come at the same situations, you know, sort of the same scenes where I knew all three of these characters were there at the same time and doing things. Mm-hmm. And working at cross purposes some of the time. But it also allowed me to, you know, explore some things that I've been wanting to deal with, you know, both in the, you know, sort of the politics of the politics of being Sith, mm-hmm. and dealing with other Sith lords, and, you know, how do you actually get other people to want to, you know, be part of your empire when you're a guy who's, entire philosophy is based on, hey, it's all for me, and nothing for you. You know, I started looking at that with the Lost Tribe of the Sith series, where, you know, the word Sith society seems to be a contradiction in terms. You wouldn't think that they would have a society, but very clearly, you cannot conquer a galaxy if, you know, it's entirely an autocratic system where nobody has any hope and you're the only person with all the power.
Sure.
And it looked to me like, you know, what would be happening in this period? This is a period 1,000 years before Phantom Menace. It's a generation before Darth Bane. So it's in a period where there's all sorts of Sith lords. They're all competing to, you know, try to be the one that's going to be the main Sith lord and take over the Republic. The Republic, in the meantime, has, you know, just sort of pulled up into a fetal position and said, "Okay, we're going to let you guys sort it out, and we'll just mm-hmm. defend ourselves." You know, this period is one in which, you know, every Sith Lord is kind of, you know, fighting to, you know, see whose idea is best, whose Sith state, if you want to call it that, is best able to you know, go in and take over the galaxy. And of course we know from the movies that it was really Palpatine that figured it out,
right.
Which was, you know, I'm going to go in and I'm going to subvert an existing government, the Republic, from within, and, you know, I'm going to run it and nobody's going to know. And this is a different thing out here, because we have, you know, so many of these Sith Lords. Pretty much the only thing you've got to do to be a Sith Lord is use the Force and put on a hat and say, "Hi, I'm a Sith Lord." And, you know, the life expectancy for some of these regimes is not very long. And the only person in this period who's out here really looking out for people, you know, the people who are crushed underneath, is Kara Holt, our young, you know, 18-year-old Jedi who gets stranded out here.
It's interesting that, you know, being in the time setting, the rule of two hasn't come into play yet. So, yeah, the Sith are all over the place. You know, we're used to the movies where the Jedi in the prequel era are, you know, many and the Sith are few.
Right.
And this is reversed now. You have one Jedi and you have thousands of Sith all over.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's a lot of fun. It allowed me to design you know, different factions and come up with, you know, different mechanisms for how they would do things.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't think that any two of them are alike at all. You know, we have, you know, Damon and Odian, the brothers that we've met in the comics already. You mm-hmm. know, Damon is delusional. He thinks he created the universe.
He's got a unique outlook on life and his role in the universe, which I think is great.
Yep. And we find out a lot more about him and his really deranged, you know, view of things in the novel. You know, Odian, his older brother, who thinks he's, you know, born to be the destroyer of the universe. You know, all of his people are, you know, all about, you know, who can cash in his service first. They all want to die like lemmings. yeah, then we have these other characters that I brought in. You know, there are a couple of twins, Quillen and Dramica, that I think are unlike anybody we've seen before in terms of how they relate to the dark side, how they relate to the Force. Then we have Arcadia, another character in the novel who another Sith Lord or Sith Lady or however you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I think she would consider herself to be much more enlightened. And that allows me to get into, well, what would an enlightened Sith regime look like? All of these things are about how do you get, the population to buy in? It really occurred to me that they can't all be slave regimes where it's just, entirely, autocratic. We're running everything. Something's got to be – there's got to be some other mechanism in some of these, I guess – I don't know if you want to call them governments. But there's got to be something out there that causes cohesion and gets these guys to go out and do what they're supposed to do in the name of the Sith Lord who, in the end, is the only one who can be the one that can have power.
Now, so in other words, you're saying there's got to be a way for Sith to have some semblance of order, similar to the Jedi's, but in their own dark, twisted way.
Well, that's right. A lot of it is, to me, how do you get things done? Mm-hmm. Who builds the ships? It can't all be droids. It can't all be droids and slave labor. There are droids. There is slave labor, but it's. We get into an interesting dynamic with the Sith anyway, because if you do get followers around you, and there are adepts and things, there are people who really believe in Daemon's vision or Odian's vision or whoever, you can get these people out there. But then the thing you got to worry about is, well, if they really believe Sith philosophies, then they're rivals. Then they are people who might knock you off one day. That is absolutely the dynamic that we've set up over in Lost Tribe of the Sith, which is Lord of the Flies gone berserk because you've got this deserted planet with just a bunch of Sith there, and everybody wants to rule the world in consecutive order and for however long they can. I think that is something that really has to be answered. If you want to look at it in a really kind of a strange light, I think this is what comes at the founding of any movement. The founding fathers of, whatever particular, philosophy you have, there are all these dueling ideas of how to do it. Which is the way to be the perfect Sith? Which is the route that's going to win for everybody? And of course, we know from the future that, Darth Bane winnows it down to just the two, and the rule of two is his solution. Right. But there had to have been other solutions in the past. What we're doing now doesn't discount that this process, happened before, thousands of years ago too, in the Old Republic era, or earlier than that, because by nature of how the Sith do things, knowledge is frequently lost. They make advances only to backslide. So I think this is kind of fun. This is, really it's the Dark Ages for the Republic, but it's also in a sense a Dark Age for the Sith too. I think if there's one thing that people reading the novel will realize, if they were looking for, fully formed, perfect, clones of Darth Vader, or the Emperor, who have the full Sith philosophy together, they're going to find characters that I think are a lot different. As we say, some of them are actually somewhat comical sometimes, because you realize how ludicrous their particular take on things is.
When coming up with all these ideologies, you're creating, as you say, multiple factions that all believe they're all Sith, but they all have different ways to get things done. Do you draw on any real philosophies or individuals for this, or do you just kind of take certain ideas that are already out there and kind of mix it all together and make it work for your particular story?
Well, years ago, I got a master's degree in Soviet studies. And I was going for the doctorate, but the Soviet Union collapsed on my dissertation. So I cashed out, and that was that. But you know, really, the technical name for it was comparative politics, where I was studying totalitarian regimes. And so it was something that I knew at the time that, you know, there was the big Red Scare in the 50s and 60s, and the fear was that the domino theory would happen. Well, the communists would take over one country, and then it would be the next, and then it would be the next, and then it would be the next. And the thing that nobody really considered at that point was that communism in, you know, just an example here, communism in, you know, the Soviet Union and China were two completely different things. And it was completely different from communism in North Vietnam, and completely different from how it was practiced in Cuba and North Korea. They're all, you know, subtly different in some cases, but dramatically different in some cases. And, you know, in theory, yeah, they're all still marching behind the same banner. But in reality, you know, some of these countries went to war with each other.
Sure.
So this is something where I wanted to add, I think, some nuance to the extent that I could here. This was a period where it just made sense that this was a time of a fracturing. Yeah. This was a time of, you know, a bunch of different ways to get at this. And, you know, again, if people are looking for, you know, Darth Maul, Darth Vader, you know, style Sith. Those haven't, you know, that their model for, you know, for, you know, the Sith idol hasn't, or Sith ideal hasn't come about yet. You know, a lot of these guys have to get voted off the island first.
Yeah, exactly.
So now that you've done both novel and comic book, which do you have more fun at? What do you find more attractive?
I think they're completely, you know, different experiences on a lot of levels. On the one hand, it's fun to get into the characters' heads in prose and be able to do some of the things that you can't do in comics so much anymore. You know, the thought balloon went away in comics in the 1980s, pretty much, early 90s. So we no longer have quite so many opportunities for the narrator to come in and, you know, tell you what, or for the writer to come in and tell you what truth is.
Sure.
And also, you know, just my personal style, I don't use an omniscient narrator a whole lot. So a lot of what you find out about things comes in whatever I can work into the dialogue or whatever the artist can draw. So, it was fun to be able to get into some of these deeper thoughts. You know, we have a character who is, you know, really interested in history in the novel. And, you know, if you did that in comics, it would be very hard to depict.
Sure.
And so I enjoy being able to do that. At the same time, you know, I love working with these artists in comics where they can, you know, take, you know, my shell of an idea for what a character looks like, or what a spaceship looks like, or something like that, and can really run with it. You know, I mentioned that there's going to be something coming up here, should be online as of this recording. I designed a model for myself for what the main spaceship in the novel looks like.
Oh, excellent.
There's a starship called the Diligence, and it is a, you know, a homebrew spaceship, more or less, that is used by the artillery commander, that is Jero Rusher. He's one of our main characters.
Brigadier.
I wanted to do something really special with this ship that, you know, really got into how it functioned and you know how it, you know, was designed to integrate with, you know, artillery combat in a space setting. I sat down with my son and we built it out of Legos.
That's really cool. That's really cool.
And so we're going to have that on StarWars.com here, where we actually show not just my diagram, my schematic that I came up with from that model, but we'll show people the model too.
Well, that's great. Well, your son, based on a talk you gave about Knight Errant at Celebration 5, your son seems to be integral to helping you design your spaceships and vehicles. I believe the was it the kinetic corruptor that he helped you?
Yeah, the kinetic corruptor was something where it's I was reaching for what is this thing? How can I explain to the artist what this looks like? And then I realized, you know, it looks pretty much like the wing strut that comes from the TIE fighter, the Kenner TIE fighter, when you snap it off. And my son said, just send them that.
Yeah.
And so we did. Another thing that he did as well, and you know, I think there'll be a picture of this on the website as well, is you know, back when we were doing Knights of the Old Republic, you know, we built the cockpit of the Hot Prospect, the big mining ship out of Legos too. And you know, this was something where we wanted it to look a certain way, or I needed it to look a certain way because I wanted to, you know, put a lot of scenes in there. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can only really say so much you know, in description, in a comic book description, and pretty much the artist goes from there. So I think it's a fun little way of integrating various you know, parts of the hobby together.
Yeah.
You know, Lego, of course, is a Star Wars licensee, so it's all it's all canon, I guess.
So you've mentioned Knights of the Old Republic. So I've got another comparison here, which I don't want to unfairly compare what you're doing now with Knight Errant to Knights of the Old Republic, because they are obviously two separate they're entirely two separate storylines with different tone and different settings and everything. But since you're the one that is writing both of them, or that did write KOTOR and is writing Knight Errant now, how do you find your approach is different? Like, as I mentioned, the tone's a little different. KOTOR had a little bit lighter tone, at least what we saw as the series progressed with characters like Griff in it, who were able to lighten the mood, and the bumbling Jedi who, you know, wasn't really completely trained, as opposed to Kara Holt in Knight Errant, who, you know, is fully trained. She's ready to go. She's about as prepared as she can be for the impossible task that is set before her.
Well, and of course, then we hit her with a completely different impossible task that she was never trained for. I think that's a major distinction. You know, we approached this where, you know, the idea was this series was going to be about characters who were 180 degrees apart. You know, they were going to be similar in the sense that they were both, you know, basically good people. But you know, Kara was going to be somebody who was driven, you know, beyond all things, and she was driven to succeed, driven to be good at what she did. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not a fanatic that you know can't see. You know, can't see the truth. I think that's a major, you know, difference between her and you know, say we had the Celeste Morn character that went through the Vector storylines, mm-hmm. Who was, you know, also an underground character and also industrious. But Kara makes a lot of decisions on her own. I think one of the things that, yeah, consciously we decided, you know, there would not be any obvious, you know, comic relief character. We wanted to do something where, yeah, it's a dark period. There would be humor, but the humor would come, I think, more from, you know, it would be, you know, us looking at these very strange societies and realizing, wow, this is just weird. You know, this is just too much. I mean, again, you know, you look at the head of North Korea. You know, people, you know, yeah. I mean, this is somebody who, I don't think we have anybody who's quite like that. But you know, when you set up your entire society based on absurdities, mm-hmm. That other people cannot understand. You know, and we, you know, there's certainly an element in, you know, the novel gets into it to a greater degree, even of, you know, where the regular people are having to, you know, sort of live, you know, with one eye closed to the strange and ridiculous things that they're forced to believe. Mm. I think that there is some humor that comes from there. So, I think the the point of view of the series starts different from the beginning. It's a darker time. There are bigger, worse things going on. Zane still had the glorious Republic to be able to head back to. Mm-hmm. During a golden age for it. It's a long time since there's been any golden age in the Republic where we're at now. And certainly I think everybody's outlook is by definition different, but there are still decent people. And
yeah.
It takes a while to find out who's on your side. And I think that's, when we talk about the other two, main characters of the novel, I think that's always a tension that's going on as we go along is, who here is trustworthy?
Mm-hmm.
You have that moment that you had in Star Wars with Han Solo. You had that moment where you had Lando Calrissian in Empire. Where
right.
is this somebody who is really, is their heart in the right place, but they're doing the wrong thing or are on the wrong path?
Mm.
Or are they really down with the Sith and it's just, might as well fight about it?
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to see where Knight Errant's going to go. As a big fan of the Knights of the Old Republic series, I'm glad that it's not going in the same place, because if it was, then I think a lot of fans would ask, well, why did we cancel Knights of the Old Republic then if we're going to just do the same thing but with different characters? So I'm very excited to see what's happening with that. So what's next coming with you? Can we expect maybe a KOTOR one-shot at some point anytime soon? Or are you kind of done with that and you're looking forward to different characters, different eras, different stories?
I have a number of things cooking. And we will make announcements when there's things to announce. At the moment, I need the announcements spaced out a little bit because I've got a lot going on. As I said, I had the Mass Effect Evolution series starting at the exact same time, that we had the novel coming out, there are other things, to talk about here, later this year, and just pretty much, people need to stay tuned. My website is farawaypress.com, and I'm also on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, and also, people can look forward to Lost Tribe of the Sith number 6, Sentinel, which is due out. It looks like it's due out on February 21st now,
yep.
A little bit in advance of the next Fate of the Jedi novel. As you mentioned, farawaypress.com, fans of your comics, as well as, I guess, the book, as soon as it comes out, can visit that. You've got a nice set of trivia pages set up for each issue. I would follow these through Knights of the Old Republic, where new issue comes out and we can log into there, and you have some interesting little tidbits about how you came up with a design or an in-joke or an Easter egg or something like
yep.
that. So there's always interesting tidbits, and it's
a neat feature.
Yeah,
it's the DVD commentary
yeah.
is what it is.
Well, it's great that as an author, you're putting that extra information out, because a lot of that stuff just would never see the light of day anyplace else, I guess.
I started that back when I was first starting out, when I was doing Crimson Dynamo for Marvel and then later Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the way I approached it then was, what would I want to remember about this later on, and what can I do that will help other people to see how comics are made, pretty much if you don't figure out the trivia now and write it down, you're going to forget it later on.
Right. Right. Well, John, I appreciate you taking time out to talk with Chris and I tonight. Again, that website, if people are interested, is farawaypress.com, and people can contact you through that. Also, they should look forward to the mass market paperback of Knight Errant, which was released on January 25th. They can find the Knight Errant Influx short story at StarWars.com, and Star Wars Knight Errant is a monthly comic. Well, I guess it's coming out in spurts. I guess they're doing a few issues, and then you're taking a couple months off, and then you're doing some more issues, but that's coming out through Dark Horse Comics.
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John.
I appreciate it.
John, in an interview, he mentioned the building the ships with his son out of Lego. Mm-hmm. There is actually a great article on StarWars.com, the article that he referenced to now at StarWars.com/vault/books. And it's really neat to read his son. I think he said he was 8 years old, maybe nine.
I was going to say 10, but yeah.
Okay.
He's a young lad.
He's a young lad, yeah. And it looks like they have quite a good time, you know, building those ships. And it's pretty neat to know that somebody so young has had an impact on Star Wars canon like that.
Well, and there's some great photos, too. I mean, there's like some photos from Knights of the Old Republic for the design of the ships there. And they're made out of, you know, just whatever Lego pieces they had around. So it's mm-hmm. red, yellow, blue, green, white, black, you know, yeah. just all these colors. And then I don't remember which ship it was, but his son built a new one out of like using only the pieces from the Darth Vader TIE fighter.
Yeah.
And so it's this really dark, sleek looking ship. It's very talented. And
yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm sure that's got to be a great boost to his son's ego. You know, he can go up to his friends and say, you know, hey, you see my. See my ship designs on StarWars.com. That'd be awesome as a kid.
Or in the comic book store.
Oh, well, yeah, that'd be true to say, hey, this is my ship that I designed for my dad on the cover of this comic. Maybe I'll build some stuff out of Lego and send some pictures over to John. I think
you that's might as well.
Yeah. I got tons of Lego. My kids, you know, build it once and then they just throw it downstairs. So.
Yeah. We've also got a first look at the new Star Wars novel Riptide. Actually, the cover for Riptide on the same site. What do you think of that cover?
I'm not 100% sold on it.
Does it look like Giovanni Ribisi to you? Just a little bit. I got that. Just a little. I don't know.
I did not think that, but you know that looking at it now, I can see that a little bit. but to me, it looks like they took a photo of somebody and then they just ran it through a Photoshop filter, which is not. It's not the style of art that I'm used to seeing on the cover of a Star Wars book. And, mm-hmm. you know, I know for paperbacks, they tend to do a slightly different style than they do for the hardcovers and everything like that. But
right.
It doesn't grab me right now. It's just, for those of you that haven't seen it, it's like a, what'd you say? Like a torso shot of this Jedi with a yellow lightsaber, and he's just kind of staring at you, at the reader.
It's a real close-up shot of his face almost, though. It's I don't know. It just kind of struck me weird. I mean, I don't think the story is going to be bad. It's just the cover looks a little off.
Yeah, I mean, you can't judge a book by its cover or something along those lines, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, so as we mentioned, some of the newest books that are that have just been released are the Knight Errant paperback, which, as we mentioned in the interview, it's got the comics section in the middle, which is really cool. So if you haven't had a chance to pick up the Knight Errant 1-4 comics that are already out, you can get a nice little taste of what you're missing there. And it reproduces really nicely in the paperback style. And then we've got the paperback edition of Backlash, which was the hardcover from Fate of the Jedi from, I guess, probably about a year ago. I don't remember exactly when that came out.
Usually, I think it's usually about a year until they transfer them to the paperback. So we do have an update from our Rebel Scum forum member, Vinar, regarding the free ebook downloads.
The Sith ones?
Yeah, he says, a little update on the Sith stories in Canada. I tried again on Barnes & Noble, Stenza, Amazon, and a few others. I always get the same message. These are not available for purchase from my billing location because of distribution issues. Maybe because of some dumb bilingual law here in Quebec or something. But thanks to you guys, I did find out that I have access to the PDF files on StarWars.com. So, at least he was able to get those. I was glad we were able to help him out with that.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's great. I'm glad. Yeah, I'm glad we were able to help him out with that. So, well, that's too bad. He can't get them for his e-reader. But I don't know. Maybe depending on what he's got, maybe he can take the PDFs from StarWars.com and put them on there.
Yeah. We have some new essential guides coming out. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so I posted the cover for the newest Essential Guide, which is The Essential Guide to Warfare by Jason Fry. It was supposed to be out in August later this year, but it got bumped back to March of next year. Mm. And it's not a, I guess according to the editor, it's not a problem with the book. It's just the fact that they're trying to spread out the amount of books. I think, I believe that Del Rey has listened to the fans and things that we've said on the Forcecast and, you know, in print on the different websites about, there's just too many books that are coming out, and it's,
yeah.
With, I mean, and they're all from the same company, so they're all vying for our attention. So I'm glad to see that stuff is not coming out as rapidly as it has been in the past. It's going to give me a chance, A, to catch up, and B, you know, to actually be able to take my time and read mm-hmm. what's coming out. Let's see, I guess also 2012, they had mentioned this on StarWars.com at one point. There's a new book called The Essential Reader's Companion by Pablo Hidalgo. And I assume that that's going to be taking us through essential, basically like a list of books and stories that people need to read. Probably like, what was it, the Essential Chronology? But mm-hmm. I would think this is more from a out-of-universe standpoint, like from a real-world standpoint of like what books have what stories and stuff like that.
Right.
And then the editor over at Del Rey, Erich, lets us know that Dan Wallace has also got plans for a third Essential Guide to Characters, and there's a new Essential Guide to Vehicles and Vessels that they're working on, and then this
nice.
Other series, which when I read the title for it, I had to pause for a minute just because of all the mythological stories I've been reading with my kids, because it's called The Essential Guide to the Underworld, and we've been reading Percy Jackson stories, and I'm like, what? The Underworld, like Boba Fett and Jabba the Hutt and those guys. So, but they don't have any more details about that. So,
just a title.
Yeah. So that sounds kind of cool. So I'm kind of interested to see what they're going to do with that, because, you know, there's, we know, like I just mentioned, you got the Bounty Hunters, you got Jabba the Hutt. What else? I mean, I don't know. Mm. And the Essential Guides are like 100-page books. So,
yeah,
it's a lot of stuff to fill, so I'm kind of interested to see what they're going to do there.
There is a really awesome title coming out this year. I read about it, I think it was last year, middle of last year. StarWars.com had an article about an untitled Timothy Zahn novel coming out. It did not give a date, didn't give a title, they didn't really say anything about it, other than the fact that it was going to feature Mara Jade, Luke, Han, Leia. And we now have a title. It's called Star Wars Choices of One. It comes out on July 19th. It is in hardback, and it does feature all of those characters. And I cannot for the life remember when it's set. I believe it's right in the middle of Empire and Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I
want to say.
It follows... Oh.
Oh, doesn't it follow Allegiance?
It follows Allegiance, yeah.
Right,
so it takes place after that. And hopefully
after.
We'll get to see the... Hand of Judgment Stormtrooper group in it as well. Mm-hmm. The reason I mentioned that is because originally when this book was announced back in April of 2009, this book was announced in April of 2009. I mean...
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
So its working title was Choices, and then they changed it to call it Hand of Judgment. And then they've returned now to have a variant of the original title, which was Timothy Zahn's original one called Choices of One. But,
I cannot believe it's been 2 years. That's amazing.
I know. Well, it's, you know, and it's when it shows up in Sue Rostoni's blog, you know, like here's, you know, untitled Timothy Zahn book, you know, 2011
right.
or something like that's all it said. I mean, we didn't know.
Yeah.
I don't think we knew. Well, we still really don't know anything about it. But Timothy Zahn book in on the 20th, close to the 20th anniversary of Heir to the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. I can only hope there's some other cool stuff going on there. Well, and
hardcover.
We also, there's the new hardcover of Heir to the Empire that I guess has some additional material that is going to be in it, from what I understand. I don't think it's like, not like outtakes. I think it's like annotations, like
right.
the annotated screenplays.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. You know, I mean, you can't own too many copies of Heir to the Empire, right?
Absolutely not.
So you have some information here about also talking about the books that are available through the Sci-Fi Book Club. Can you tell us a little bit about the club for people that don't know about this?
Sure. Well, Sci-Fi Book Club has been around for a long time. It's one of many book clubs. This particular one just focuses on the sci-fi nature. And basically, it's one of those you sign up for an account. You get so many books for a very minimal amount, which basically means you have to buy, I think it's 5 or 6 books at full club price by 3 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. I signed up a while back, and I got a bunch of Star Wars novels. The reason I signed up was because I really only like to collect the hardcover novels, and a lot of these paperbacks that were coming out only in paperback, they actually got in their own version of a hardcover, slightly smaller than a regular. And it was actually going good for quite a while there, and I don't know why, but they stopped doing that a lot. There are still a few. Mysteries of the Jedi is up for pre-order, which is a new DK Young Readers book about how to use the Force as a Jedi. Red Harvest, which just came out, and then The Fate of the Jedi Vortex. They've got all of those in their hardcover line.
Right. Now, but those books are hardcovers to begin with some fashion. It's just they come out as a Sci-Fi Book Club, like you said, which is slightly smaller than standard hardcover. Yeah, I too joined, unfortunately, probably a little later than I should have, when I found out what they were doing for the New Jedi Order series. They were taking the paperbacks and combining the 2 or 3 book paperback series or some of the one-offs into hardcover books and selling them, you know, for like $14 or something like that.
Now they cost a fortune.
Yeah, on the secondary market, unfortunately, these books can command very steep prices, upwards of $70-$80, unless you can find them in a used bookstore, which I'm often haunting used bookstores looking for these. Though I got to say, I have found some good bargains on older ones. But yeah, they'll take, like, say, the old Bounty Hunters trilogy or the Han Solo trilogy by A.C. Crispin, and they took all 3 paperbacks, combined into a hardcover. I think the last hardcover they did was, I think they took the second 2 Republic Commando stories and put those into a hardcover. That was the last we saw, and that was probably, what, 1.5-2 years ago now?
Yeah, it was at least that long ago. I don't know why. I actually wrote them an email about 2 weeks ago, just inquiring. You know, I said officially on the record, you know, why has this not been done? And I didn't get a response. I got an automated response. I haven't received an actual response back yet. So we'll see what they say.
Yeah, make sure to let us know if they come back with anything.
Yeah, I'm just curious because it's really important to me to have that. I mean, I've got all these books on my shelf, and all of a sudden they're not doing it. Is this something Lucasfilm decided that it didn't want anymore? Or is this something that the Sci-Fi Book Club decided? I'm just curious to know why. And if it is, if there is a reason behind it, what that is, and if they're going to continue to do it at some point.
Yeah, I would hesitate to say it would be something that Lucasfilm would say no to, because ever since the original Star Wars novelization came out back in 76, Sci-Fi Book Club's been around since the 60s, I think.
Yeah,
they've been there doing, you know, publishing their books,
right? Yeah.
So pretty much, you know, there's a hardcover edition of all of the original, you know, vintage books via the Sci-Fi Book Club. Even if there wasn't a regular hardcover version, like the Han Solo Adventures by Brian Daley, those have hardcover copies from the Sci-Fi Book Club. The Lando novels, I think all 3 Lando novels have,
I believe so,
hardcovered, though I've never been able to confirm the third book, which I think is it Starcave of Thonboka? It's either Starcave or Flamewind of Ocean.
Yeah, I have looked for those too, and I've never been able to find them. You know, if you do find them, they're in such bad condition. You know, they're missing the dust jacket cover or something like that. So,
well, and the dust jacket cover is pretty much the only thing that makes them noticeable as a Star Wars book, because, you know, if anyone who has any kind of hardcover book, if you take the dust jacket off, usually the book underneath is, you know, black or dark blue or gray, just like every other book, and there's nothing that distinguishes it from any other book on your shelf. So it's the dust jacket, I think, that most people are interested in. And yeah, like you say, there, if you find it, the dust jacket's usually missing or in bad enough shape that it's not worthwhile.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm interested to know what's up with that. Well, maybe we can, maybe they'll do something new. Occasionally they do some stuff with comics too. They had also done some special, like a binder with three legacy trade paperbacks inside. So they basically collected legacy trade paperback 1, 2, and 3, and then put it in this little hard case, you know, like a slip case, I guess.
Yeah, I've seen
and
those. Released
it, and they did that for 1, 2, and 3 as volume 1, and then they did 4, 5, and 6 as volume 2. And I was able to find volume 1 at the time, and volume 2 was sold on its own for a little while, but now it's just a bundle of the two, and I don't know, they're asking something ridiculous like $70 for it, which, I mean, for 6 trade paperbacks, that's a totally great price. I mean, I think the trade
paperbacks... But not if you already have the first.
Yeah, if you already have the first 3, you know, it's like spending almost, you know, it is spending your money all over again, so...
Yeah,
But, yeah, that's great. Also, I guess one other thing that we would like to do here is last month, for those of you that were listening, you heard a review that we did of the new Joe Schreiber book, Red Harvest, which is a horror novel set in the Star Wars universe. This is Joe's second book after Death Troopers. We were able to catch up with Joe this last month, and we have a brief interview with him about how he came up with Red Harvest and some other tidbits about his writing style and what he may have planned for the future.
Hello.
Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Hi, this is Jay and Chris from Jedi Journals on Forcecast.net.
Hey, Joe.
Hi, fellas.
We want to thank you very much for taking some time to talk with us tonight about your new book, Red Harvest.
Oh, no problem. No problem whatsoever. My pleasure.
So, I wanted to start off asking you this this question. So, I've read your bio on Death Troopers and on Red Harvest, and it talks about your family and where you've lived, and you seem such a such a nice guy. But where do these insane story ideas come from that you put in your books?
Well, it's always the nice guys that you can't trust, right? Because their stories never really add up at the end. I worked hard on creating a facade of normalcy to cover up the raging sea of insanity that generates these horrible stories. No, I think the answer to that question is that, I sort of became a horror writer once I started having kids. That's the short answer to that question. I sort of, once I had something that I was desperately afraid I wasn't going to be able to protect, then the whole issue of fear became this very real thing, and it sort of manifested itself in the stories I was writing even before the Star Wars horror stories came up. Just, it became about protecting the things that you hold closest to you and what would happen if those things were in jeopardy. So horror just became an outgrowth of that, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely can attest to that, having kids myself. And when we had done our review of Death Troopers about a year ago, I had also had a chance to read No Doors, No Windows, and very scary stuff. I mean, that's just great horror elements that you've managed to put together in all three of the books of yours that I've read, the two Star Wars ones and No Doors, No Windows.
Well, thank you.
So, Joe... this cover that we see here, this is the second Star Wars novel you've done. Where did the artwork for this cover come about? Can you tell us about who decided that and what's actually featured on the front and the back, actually?
Well, there's like a Red Harvest, right?
Red Harvest.
The cover art for that was, it's always a surprise with the cover art, because you always, at least I always discover it before any other place. I always see it show up on the Star Wars website, and that's how I know that's the cover of the book.
Oh.
It sort of surprised me with that as well, and that was definitely the case with Death Troopers, and everybody loved the cover for that. And when the time came for to come up with the cover art for Red Harvest, I know they worked hard on trying to come up with something that was as creepy and sort of iconic as the Death Troopers cover. And they ended up with they ended up with a picture of what looks pretty clearly like a Sith acolyte who's been infected with something that takes their natural state of evil to a whole new level of evil. You know, you see the red lightsaber in the foreground and in the hood, so you're obviously, you know you're dealing with an acolyte of the Sith, which is one of the big elements in Red Harvest. Mm-hmm. And then on the back cover, they've got this sort of cool image of Darth Scabrous, who's the sort of main antagonist in a lot of ways, and also sort of the reason why the story sort of goes into motion in the beginning. So he's this sort of very foreboding figure in the back cover.
Excellent. Yeah, I wondered if that was him or if that was one of the other students there. So thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, that's my interpretation of it. As I said, like, I sort of inherited this thing, and they did a really good job. But I'm analyzing it and interpreting it just as much as anybody else did. So okay. that's my 30-second take on it.
Okay.
So Red Harvest is for those that have listened to our show before. We talked a little bit about this. It's not actually a sequel to Death Troopers, and it's because it takes place in the timeline prior to that, and I wouldn't really even call it a prequel in that. It's just another story that you're deciding to tell. Did you come up with the idea to set it so far back in the Old Republic, or was that something that was dictated by Del Rey?
I wouldn't say it was dictated. It was sort of born out of a dialogue that we were having about what might come next. And, I mean, the cool thing about operating within the Star Wars universe, obviously, is there's just so much undeveloped real estate that you can use. And the timeline is so wide open as far as areas to work in. And they had suggested and really sort of were excited about the notion of working in the Old Republic era, especially because I could do things that I hadn't been able to do in Death Troopers with Sith and Jedi, and but also just kind of dealing with a time period that people were starting to get excited about, but not a whole lot had been done with. So we talked a little bit about that time period and decided, this is a good place to set it. And it also sort of establishes the idea that if there was going to be another book, it wouldn't necessarily have to be tied into the sort of classic, Star Wars timeline that people have seen in movies. Mm-hmm. Would identify with. You can sort of set anywhere. You can, as you said, it's not even necessarily a prequel. It's another scary story. And, if you wanted to continue to write scary stories set in the Star Wars world, there's just a ton of potential for all different kinds of things. And I think we wanted to sort of establish that with this book.
This particular book, how long did it take you to finish it from start to finish? I was listening to Jimmy's interview with you from back in 2009, and I remember you saying then that the book was almost done back then, and it just came out, obviously, at the end of 2010.
Right. There was, I think when you're dealing with Del Rey, especially in the Star Wars books, it becomes an issue almost of not trying to saturate the marketplace. They obviously have a lot of really good writers writing some excellent books, and they wanted this to have a chance to not have to compete with something else. So the end of December this year sort of became the time frame for it, just to give it a sort of best shot. The book itself had been finished for a while, and I was doing a little bit of polishing on it, but like I told Jimmy, it had been pretty much finished back then, and there was some editorial stuff that was done, but mainly we just wanted to give it the best time that we thought it could be launched at. And we thought, I'm setting it on this planet covered in snow, maybe winter's the best time to bring this one out. So that's sort of some of the decision making that went into it.
Well, Chris and I were talking. We thought that Death Troopers was great coming out around October, and we did kind of find it strange they were pushing this one in the December time frame, because October seems like just a great it's a great time to capitalize on sort of the horror genre. So it was kind of strange.
That's a good point. One of the things there's something weird about the week between Christmas and New Year's too, I think. It's just kind of a strange week in general. It's a holiday week. It's not quite a normal week. And, my feeling is, by the time Christmas actually comes, the lead up's been so long, but by the time Christmas comes, you may be in the mood to spill some blood and just kind of, look into the dark side a little bit as you head into the last few days of the year. There's something vaguely ominous about running down the clock on the end of the year. And, maybe that's not the most, necessarily the worst time to bring out a horror novel. So, Halloween is also a possibility, and, maybe next time around, but this one we decided to bring out right at the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, that is a unique perspective on the, release, process for that. One thing, I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, Joe, there's actually a short bit in the book where Rojo Trace uses a threat against somebody, and I think it's Tulk the Bounty Hunter. It sounds awfully familiar. This is something we actually heard in a movie. It came out about 2 years
ago. Yes.
And I also read the character was based on Liam Neeson's character from the same film. Is that true?
Yeah, I lost a bet on that. I told somebody that I was going to set a character in the book. I was going to base the character on Liam Neeson, and they're like, "Oh, not the Star Wars character." I was like, "No, he's going to be based on the guy from Taken." And I want to actually acknowledge the use of dialogue was just too juicy not to use. I mean, it was funny because, you know, in the first draft of the book, Roger was not the character I wanted him to be. He wasn't nearly ballsy enough to do what I needed him to do, and I was just like, you know what? I don't want this sort of nebulous, sort of mystic Jedi. I want a guy who can seriously just come in and take names, and he needs to, you know, lay down the law from the very beginning, like, this is what's going to happen, you know, I really wanted to be that kind of character. And from that moment on, all I could think about was Liam Neeson taken. I was just like, this guy absolutely has to have this line in there. And it was sort of a wake-up call. I'm sort of just putting it out there to see if people would pick up on it, because it was just too good to resist.
Yeah, I picked up on that right away.
Yeah, I hadn't. Chris pointed it out to me, and I mean, I had read the line, and I was like, "Oh, that's a nice nod to Taken." But he's like, "But no, don't you see what Joe's done with the character?" And I have to go back and like reread some of like the introductions now, just to see how this plays out with that new visual in my head.
Yeah.
There's another nod that we see to Star Wars, keeping in the vein of this, that there's a character, I think it's Kindra, that says, "I have a bad feeling," which kind of is a nod towards the "I've got a bad feeling about this" line that we've gotten in the trilogies. Was that on purpose?
No, that was probably just a knee-jerk reaction on my part. I mean, what I've discovered when I write, you know, this book and Death Troopers is that even more so than when I write, you know, non-Star Wars canon stuff, lines suggest themselves in a way that's almost just like having dialogue run through your head. I mean, it's almost like you're transcribing voices and dialogue that you've heard. I saw Star Wars when I was 8 years old, and you know, it's obviously been a huge part of the sort of my formative understanding of pop culture. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably not a week that goes by that I don't encounter something out in the world that triggers a line from one of the Star Wars movies in my head. And, it shows up on the page when you sit down to write. It's almost like you're this ventriloquist because you're channeling these things. And, you know, half of the stuff, more than half, you know, probably 80% of it is a sort of intuitive, underlying, unconscious work that a writer does when you sit down to write, when it's more just like the unconscious is speaking and the fingers are basically just transcribing it.
I think that would be a problem just with all the pop culture references that are around and, you know, quotes that people throw into their everyday dialogue that you really probably would not want to try to get that to come across in this book. So it would keep people within the universe and not draw them out and say, "Oh, he's referencing this or that."
Right. It's always a concern, and hopefully that's what a good editor is there for, to make you realize when you push or kick somebody out of the world of a book.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the editing, this is something that actually popped out to me, and I'd like to think you did this on purpose, or maybe the editors did this on purpose, but I'm sure it's just a fluke. But there was a nice shout out to the Force cast that we had talked about on our show. It was in chapter 37, the way that the line broke, one line ended, "The Force cast," and then there was a hyphen. And,
you picked up on that. That was a deliberate thing.
Oh, that was awesome.
For sure. So that's the book is full of these little secret things that I've inserted in there. And so after the interview, give me your address and I'll send you a signed Red Harvest poster for that.
Oh, nice,
excellent. So Joe, when you are creating new planets in the Star Wars universe and New Harvest, what do you look for and what are you trying to accomplish when you name them? Adosser Faustin, I hope I'm saying that right. Example, do you write the story around these new worlds, or is it the other way around?
Well, it's funny because the naming of things is both sort of the most challenging and the most gratifying. You know, everybody loves the names in Star Wars. I always did, certainly. You know, I mean, there's just the way they roll off the tongue. They're obviously chosen from, you know, for just a certain, you know, just the effect either on the page or emerging from the voice. You know, I find myself going into weird, like, you know, Wikipedia historical pages. I think part of the Adosser Faustin name came from a history of Haiti I was reading. Like, you just find aspects of the language that that just found Star Wars-y enough, but not to the point where it's mocking what you're doing, you know? And you want it to sound exotic and not too similar to what's done before. So I end up with notebook pages of names and planet names, and, you know, you combine things and cross them off and turn them inside out and try to come up with something somewhat new.
In the with the names that you come up with, I know that I seem to recall in Death Troopers there were some Imperial officers that their names were nods to different horror characters or directors. Yep. I think I was looking through. I read Red Harvest with an eye for that, and I didn't see anything that jumped out to me in the same way. I didn't know if there were any other little Easter eggs that you might wanted to direct people towards if you didn't want to point them out directly.
That's a really good question, and now that I'm thinking about it, I wonder if there are. The Sith names were just kind of, I mean, I think, again, those were just names that sort of suggested themselves as they went along. There's nothing deliberate. Of course, in Death Troopers, there's three different characters that are all, you know, names of characters Vincent Price played in horror films. I think I did that at one point.
Right. Yeah, that was it.
It's funny. Yeah, I don't know. Let me ruminate on that, because I'm not sure if there are or not.
Okay. As a reader, for me, what's fun is kind of getting into the sort of, I guess those Easter eggs is kind of I look for when I read these books, because it's the extra nod that the author gives, or just those little touches.
Right.
One thing Chris and I had talked about when we did the review for this was the fact that we've heard about the Jedi Agricultural Corps before, but we've never actually seen them in action. So that was a really fresh take. Was that just something that you had heard about somewhere and you decided to incorporate in here?
Yeah, that again was one of those things where you feel like you want something that's been suggested out of the Star Wars, you know, canon. You don't want something that's sort of been overworked. And so that was, you know, that came up in a conversation with Shelley Shapiro, who's my editor at Del Rey. She's like, you know, have you thought about this? And I thought, well, this is going to be interesting and challenging at the same time, because your first take on it is, well, this is just where all the Jedi would end up who weren't able, you know, basically were able to cut the muster or whatever. But that's clearly not the case. I mean, there's just a wide spectrum of Jedi ability out there, and you're going to have people expressing their powers in all kinds of different environments, you know, and this could be something that would be a little bit off the beaten path, but by no means is she like a failure or anything for it. She's got this specific ability that just happens to be, you know, fundamentally vital to this particular story that's going to throw her in the middle of a very, you know, a confrontational, you know, environment. And that's going to be interesting to sort of pursue. So, you know, that just came out of a discussion we'd had about that possibility, and it turned out to work.
Was there any concern about putting a talking plant in the book?
Well, a lot of people have had a problem with the talking plant, and you know what? Frankly, I figure that's probably going to be one of those things that's going to draw a lot of fire, and you know, and so be it. You know, I mean, one of the things I always thought was funny about, I read a lot of William Gibson's books, and there's I forget which William Gibson novel it was. I want to say it's Count Zero or maybe Mona Lisa Overdrive, and it ends with a robot throwing portable refrigerators at somebody. And it's just one of those things people were just like, that's the climax. You've got flying refrigerators. And I always thought that was cool, because he put this thing in there that, you know, people are going to be like, we're supposed to buy this. And it's just like, at the same time, you know what? I followed, you know, I was into that book for 300 pages, whatever it was, Mona Lisa Overdrive. Uh-huh. And when he put that at the end, I was just like, that's awesome, man. I'm all for it. He's doing something no one had done before. So, you know, and the talking plant is there, and, you know, it's obviously drawn a lot of, you know, people either have a problem with it or they don't. But nobody at Del Rey or Lucas ever came to me. And in fact, I think the talking plant probably played a bigger role in an earlier draft of the book back when it was called Black Orchid for a while.
Right.
They were afraid it was going to be confused for a romance novel, so they changed it to Red Harvest. So,
well, we were saying,
I don't know if the talking plant will end up getting its own holiday special, but it's definitely in there.
I will say, I mean, when I first, you know, as I'm reading through it, and we got to that part where the orchid was talking, and I'm like, really? I don't. Okay, and it took me out of the book a little bit, but then as we went on, and you introduce the Nedi, which is basically a talking tree, which we've been introduced to, I think, as far back as Dark Empire 2.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then I'm like, okay, well, there's total precedence for this. It's not completely unheard of. And
right.
If the Jedi have the ability to, you know, commune with the plants to help them grow, why wouldn't they hear a voice or something like that? So, no, I think it worked. It it definitely was a unique voice in the stories. Just again, something else that I can use to really recommend this book. I think both your books, Death Troopers and Red Harvest, are just really good, fresh stories in the Star Wars universe that have really given me the needed lift, given all of the other books that have been coming out and the storylines that kind of go on and on. And these are quick, fun reads that I can, read in a day or two and, mm-hmm. just kind of booster my, my fandom, yeah. and allow me to, you know, keep moving on with the stuff that other stuff that I feel like I've got to read. And when I know that, like when I knew Red Harvest is coming out, it's like, I got to buy it. You know, as soon as we get it, I'm reading it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't care what else is going on. So, yeah, it's just really fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because as a reader, those are the books that resonate with me too. So the ones that I can, the ones that sort of propel me through them quickly are the books I tend to really gravitate towards. So I totally get that. I don't think we're on the same page there.
Do you prefer writing books that are of the shorter, quicker story that you can get through, just kind of a real fun read? Or do you prefer writing longer, more in-depth?
Well, having done both, I have to say that, I've certainly been more successful with shorter books. In college, I wrote a book so long that once I finished it, I never could reread it. It was a 900-page book, and I basically, it was like my own Vietnam, and by the time I finished writing it, I put it away, and I thought, I'm never going to be able to read this thing. This is ridiculously overlong, overdeveloped, and ever since then, the things I've written have sort of reflected, I don't know if it's reflected my shortening attention span, but it's definitely reflected the amount of outside, concerns that sort of take me away from writing. As I've gotten older and I have, a family and kids and a mortgage and a job and these other things, the writing tends to be the sort of thing that has to happen fairly quickly. And if it starts to drift too far center, then it sort of goes right off the radar.
Yeah,
right, right. Jay actually got a preview copy of this book in the mail, which he sent to me, and I got it. 11 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was done by 9 a.m. the next morning. I just put it down, and then I thought that was great, but then my girlfriend took my copy off the shelf just today and read it in 2 hours and 49 minutes.
Wow. That might be a land speed record, actually.
I think so.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I thought surely she couldn't have actually, got everything, but she started asking me all these questions about characters and planets and species and all this stuff, so she very much got it, and I envy her reading skills. If that was the case, then I wouldn't be so behind in my reading.
Well, that's excellent to hear. Tell your girlfriend that makes up for a lot of the heat I've taken on the talking plant thing.
That's what she actually said. Just so I understand this is a talking plant, right? Yes. Just keep reading. You'll understand.
Yeah.
That's right.
I was actually really glad to read the word refresher in this book. I always love.
I'm sorry. The word what?
The word refresher. When referring to the restrooms in Star Wars novels, that's I always look for that. So that was nice. I think the last one I remember reading it was like Death Star, and then nice. Before that, I think Shadows of the Empire. So it's not used that often, but I always like that.
Yeah, you're an exclusive club now, Joe, of authors that have used the word refresher in their novels.
That's right. Yeah, I have a pin now that I can hang on my wall.
Exactly. So I haven't seen anything listed for any future work. Do you have any other plans for other Star Wars novels?
Well, it's all very nebulous right now. I mean, in the course of this book, I was having this conversation with Del Rey, and they were saying Lucasfilm wants to know what we're just going to call this series of books, since they can't all be called Death Trooper books, obviously. So they're going to be the Star Wars whatever line, and we ended up having this long sort of unfinished conversation about, the series and what they would call it, and what other books might be done. And that was sort of where we left it. So, your guess is as good as mine. We'll have to see. I'll find out when I read online that I'm doing another one, and that's when I'll find out.
Now, are you strictly wanting to do, or have you just been asked to do horror novels for Star Wars, or would you consider, going into the Star Wars universe, but not on a horror level?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about writing books for Star Wars is that you can just you can focus so completely on the story, you know, I mean, and the characters can be part of that story and the, you know, the atmosphere can be part of the story, but you absolutely can just write a story that just is deliberately machined to like drive the narrative forward, you know, hold the reader's attention, keep the pages moving. No one's going to pick this up thinking it's a Jonathan Franzen novel or it's going to be an Oprah book.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
You write the thing for the kid in the study hall or the, you know, the guy on his commute. You know, I get emails from like firemen who tell me, you know, when can this be on Kindle so I can put it in my bag and just carry it with me, you know, in between calls. I mean, these books are written for people who have lives to live and, you know, they want the excitement and sort of like you were saying, like the lift of the story. But in the Star Wars world is so great for that because it's just, it really is about telling these compelling, you know, basically these adventure stories, whether they're horror stories or crime stories or, you know, sort of the old fashioned swashbuckling, you know, hero stories. I mean, those are the tales that exist in this world. So, you know, absolutely, I would consider working outside the horror genre because it's just one of many, I think, you know, possible takes on it.
Excellent.
Well, that'd be great. I know that I'll be first in line for the next book that comes out because I've enjoyed the two that I've read in the Star Wars universe so much.
Definitely.
Well, thanks, man.
Well, Joe.
Cool.
Yeah, we'd like to thank you very much for you know taking a few moments of your busy schedule to talk with us here today on Jedi Journals. And I just want to point out to people that that you do have a website that they can visit to get more information about your writing and what's going on. And it's at correct me if I'm wrong, but it's www.scaryparent.blogspot.com.
That's right.
Okay, and if and they can find out all the information about what you're up to and all your soundtrack listings and stuff like that for your books there.
That's right. Yeah, all that stuff is there.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Joe.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye bye.
All right. So the magazines. There's not very many, but. What little we have to talk about. The Clone Wars magazine, number 2. Last we heard, Jay had not received his update.
I have it in my hand.
Ah, when did you get it?
I think shortly after we recorded the last episode.
Ah, okay.
So, but now I see that... was number 3 supposed to ship in January?
I guess so, because I got it yesterday.
Oh, these guys are killing me.
Now, I also, I don't think I mentioned this on the last show. It was issue number 1. They sent me again with another letter apologizing for the delay dated December 8th. But I got it in January.
Okay.
Like probably the beginning of January. So okay. they seem to be running a month behind. They print their letters, they pack them up, and then it sits there for a month.
Well, if they're coming from Canada, isn't there a time delay?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a little delay, but I don't know. So
it goes through customs or something. I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah. Very.
We'll ask Sheldon next time I see Sheldon. I'll ask him.
So, anyways, I got number 3, and you don't have yours. So,
you know what? I'm sure as soon as we hang up here and I go out to my mailbox in the morning, it'll be there.
Probably. Right? I mean,
we've had some snow in the area. You know, the mail's been delayed a little bit. There was the holidays.
I will say this. Our Infinities that we've been following, and this is pretty it's pretty cool this time. It's what if Boba Fett had destroyed Mace Windu?
Boba Fett had destroyed Mace Windu. Oh, okay.
In a Clone Wars cartoon episode.
Right, okay.
You know, Aura Singh, they go there to try and take him out and assassinate him, and they're saying, what if he had succeeded in that? It's pretty neat. It's pretty neat how it goes on.
What was the cover for that that Clone Wars magazine look like?
We've got the new stylings outfits for Anakin and Ahsoka. They are, it looks like they're falling down some type of a shaft at you. And that's a nice cover. There is also, what was the other thing I wanted to mention out of here? Looks like a nice pull-out poster of Savage Opress.
Oh, very cool.
From our... I think it's a poster. I mean, I guess that's what that is.
You know what I'm thinking? The thing that strikes me about this magazine that's a little different from, say, The Insider or any of the other magazine titles that we get, this has got a lot of nice full art on page art. It's, you know, character models. But like they've got the every issue, because this is more designed for kids. They're like pullout posters. Yeah. Perfect things to take with you when you go to a convention. You know, if like if you're going to Fan Days in October, I'm sure, you know, James Arnold Taylor is going to be there. You can get him to sign the Obi-Wan part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, next time you see Clancy Brown, get him to sign your Savage Opress poster.
Oh, Clancy Brown. You need to get some official pics photos of that character.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing worth mentioning is the comic for this, which is really the whole reason I'm getting it. And I think you are.
Yeah.
It's a little on the childish side. And I know this is a children's magazine, but we do see Anakin call Ahsoka Snips, and I believe she refers to him as Sky Guy.
Okay.
Now, it's been a little while since we've heard that or seen that, because that was kind of season one,
right?
Done, and then they kind of moved on from that. So
season one and done, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but this is again, as we mentioned about these Clone Wars comics. Some of the material, if not the majority of it, is repurposed from the Clone Wars comic Volume 6, which is a UK publication. Mm-hmm. And this, the comic in this one is called In Triplicate, which comes from issue number 3 of the UK series. And I think the UK series is on issue 16, 17, something like that now.
That's been out for a while.
So, yeah. So, and I'm not sure if they're, I think they're 10 times a year or something like that. So,
yeah,
this is close back to, you know, season one.
That would make sense.
Well, since we're talking about the Clone Wars magazine, I have a special gift for listeners of Jedi Journals on Forcecast.net. I have 3 sets of the Clone Wars magazine, number 1 and number 2, from our good friend Andrew over at Titan Magazines. He's the editor on this, and he sent me over some copies. So what I'm going to do is ask for listeners out there to email us at our new email address. Chris, what is that?
That is JediJournals@Forcecast.net.
JediJournals@Forcecast.net. And if you can put the subject line as Clone Wars giveaway, make sure to include your name and your mailing address. And if you can give us your favorite moment from Season 3, I'd like to hear what some people like about Season 3. It could be having, you know, something to do with any of the EU secrets revealed that we've seen. Maybe you were really a big fan of the Senate hearings. maybe you got a chance to see the Savage Opress screenings early. But go ahead and put down what you liked as your favorite moment, and send that in to us at JediJournals@Forcecast.net, and we'll draw 3 lucky winners for our March show, and send out a copy of the Clone Wars magazine number 1 and number 2.
Good luck, guys. All right. Our last magazine for this month is the brand new Star Wars Insider number 123. Have you gotten yours?
I did. Yeah, my Insider comes quite early. I mean, yeah, you know, before it's out on stands, it's in my box. I don't get it as early as a couple other people on the team, because I know that Jason and Jimmy were able to talk about it on a weekly Forcecast the other week. Because there's some information about, was it the upcoming Mortis? Well, as we record this, the upcoming Mortis trilogy.
Right.
But yeah, this issue had some great articles in it.
It did, and if you haven't been reading Insider, I know a lot of people I've talked to over the last several years have said, you know, I used to be an Insider fan. I used to be a subscribing member, and I let it go. You know, I let my subscription lapse. It just
but then there's a hole in their collection.
Well, that's why, you know, you
can't have a hole in your collection, folks. I just got to point out, if you've got issues, you know, 1 through 10, and then you jump to 15, it's not complete. No, yeah, you got to fill that in.
I agree.
Okay,
but these people, they don't seem to care. they're more, you know what? I don't need to buy that. I don't need to spend my money, because all the information in these magazines I'm seeing online before it's even in the magazine, which I understand. But I tell you, these are starting to really become awesome again. There's so much information.
Yeah, they've moved to the other side of the news curve.
Yeah.
It for a while there, well, when who had it before Titan?
Oh, Paizo,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, there was a lot of regurgitation in that. I mean, they had some original articles and stuff like that, and they had good interviews with stuff that you couldn't get elsewhere. But, you know, when Titan picked it up and when Clone Wars started and stuff like that, they were definitely behind the curve.
Yeah.
You heard about stuff on the websites. You heard about stuff on StarWars.com. Heck, you might have even seen, you know, something air, you know, or a book has already been released, and then you're reading about it in Insider, and they say, "Hey, this isn't a brand new book," and it's, "Well, I've got it in my hand. I've already got it. It's old news."
Yeah, not the case anymore, though. There are, I can't even count them. There's so many articles in here. I mean, and they're not just Clone Wars. You know, a lot of people are saying, "You know, I want the original trilogy features and stuff," and they've got a ton. There's a really nice write-up on The Empire Strikes Back and Irvin Kershner right in the front. There's a an awesome article of Matt Wood and Ben Burt on sound designing. There's multiple Clone Wars articles with several of the cast. And like you said, there's a write-up on that new trilogy, the Mortis trilogy that's coming out. So
yeah, even articles with the cast about the new trilogy. I mean, stuff that when the magazine is released, I mean, it's, well, it's probably a week or two in advance of us even seeing the first of these episodes. So
yeah, yeah. But it's neat, and I think, you know, I say give another shot if you haven't picked one up in a while. And of course, they've got so many different covers. They've got a subscription subscribers exclusive cover with no barcode on the front, which is a nice feature.
Well, no barcode and no extra text. So
right. You
know how they always like when you see the newsstand edition, it'll say, you know, inside Ahsoka's secret, and you know, Matt Lanter interviewed. Doesn't have any of that. It's like, I think it's just the title of the magazine and then the number and the price. Well, actually, there's no price because it's subscribers.
No.
So it's just like the number.
Yeah.
It's the space where the barcode goes, but there's no barcode, and it's pretty pristine.
Yeah, it looks pretty classy. And then, of course, the store version is going to have all that on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we've been getting anywhere between one and three different variant covers.
Yeah, the three, I think, were just special for the Empire Strikes Back / Celebration 5 version.
Yep.
Usually it's just the subscribers cover, the newsstand cover, and then there's a diamond retailer's exclusive cover that you can get through specialty shops and comic stores.
Yep.
And I think this
one, I don't think this had one.
Yeah, this one, it does. I want to say it's Plo Koon. It's like a white cover with Plo Koon on it.
I'm looking here to see if they have a picture of it. Oh, you know what? It's not. It's Kit Fisto.
Oh, Kit Fisto. Okay.
Yeah,
I guess Plo Koon was the previous movie.
Yeah. Yep, I have to pick that up.
Yep, and yeah, you can see, I might have to change how this works, but I have all the variant covers shuffling through on the Jedi Journals at rebelscum.com. You go into the magazine section and go down to Star Wars Insider. It's an entire page of all the covers from Star Wars Insider, and if there's a variant cover, if you wait just a second, the thumbnail changes to the variant cover, and actually,
boy, that will make you dizzy.
I was going to say, if you are prone to epilepsy fits, you probably should not go to this page because the whole page is changing every like second, and it's changing in multiple ways. So I think I need to figure out a new way to take care of that. Actually, if you click into the issue, you can look at the various covers without them flashing or anything like that. There'll be the regular cover, and then I've got links down below for the any variant covers that
perhaps you could do a rollover feature where as you roll a mouse over you get the variant.
You know what, that's a good idea, but with the multiple variants that gets a little difficult on how to handle that.
That's true.
So I don't know. Maybe if somebody has an idea, they can write into us at JediJournalsAndForceCast.net and give me a suggestion for that. So
nice. Well, I think that's it for magazines this month. Like I said, though, if you haven't looked at an Insider lately, check one out. Just go to your Barnes & Noble, you know, grocery store. They should be on the stands, and just take a peek through it, and you might find yourself a little more intrigued than you used to be.
Definitely.
All right, well, I think that will draw the conclusion to another episode of Jedi Journals.
Another exciting episode.
As always. So we'll just we'll mention it one more time. JediJournals@ForceCast.net is our new email address.
Was that new email address JediJournals@ForceCast.net?
I believe it was JediJournals@ForceCast.net.
Okay, I just wanted to check.
please write in. Let us know what you're thinking of the show. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Good or bad, and Again, if you want to enter for that contest, that Titan, Andrew at Titan, so graciously sent us those copies of those magazines. Remember, include your name, mailing address, your favorite moment from Season 3 in the Clone Wars for your chance to win.
All right, and we'll get in touch with you as soon as we make the drawing on next month's show. So, all Chris, right. Thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you, as always.
And we'll see you next month on Jedi Journals at ForceCast.net.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC, unless otherwise indicated.